another exciting episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm your host, Burl Love, editor of the Cincinnati Enquirer. With me again, in the co-hosting chair, Casey Sloan. And we have brought in the most respected, renowned expert on all things real estate and development in the market, in the city. And that's our own Sydney Franklin, who covers that for us. How are you, Sydney?
Hi, Burl. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
You are welcome. We want to talk about what's going on with the vision for the banks. You reported on a updated plan that was put together that was really focusing on the remaining five lots and what that might look like. Also a marina is in the plans, possibly.
Marina and arena.
Marina and arena. And that's, we've written several stories about this. We've had some artistic renderings of what it might look like. Mm-hmm. But what has piqued everyone's attention, what has raised the eyebrows, is in a kind of quiet, subtle way, they talk about a modern arena to replace the Heritage Bank Center. Talk about that.
Well, listen, the arena discussion's been going on for even longer than I've been here, as you know. But a study came out in late 2024 kind of citing different locations where a modern arena could go nearish downtown and also in downtown. And the banks actually wasn't one of the recommended locations. So the reason why it's so shocking to have this arena rendering placed in the bank's plan is it kind of goes against that study. Mm-hmm. However, it also makes sense, according to a number of my sources, to include it in this bank's update plan because the arena obviously activates the banks a lot of the year, even outside of, you know, the Reds playing and the Bengals playing. So everyone has a different opinion on where this arena should go. I thought it was really interesting that it was included. And so we had to write about it, of course.
Right. What was the response?
It's all over the place, really. Banks, businesses are all for it. They've been vocal about this for years. They want to keep the arena there because they need the year-round business, like I just said. Other folks, like county leaders, need a bit more time to think it over. And, you know, of course, I had to touch base with folks like Jeff Birding.
Friend of the podcast. Mm-hmm.
Friend of the podcast.
Member of the five-timer club.
Very generous with his time talking about this, but on the record, you know, pretty diplomatic, saying, like, it's all about, like, how we can pay for this. And that also...
And that's true.
Right. It's all about how we can pay for this, since the public ask will be pretty significant, like, upwards of 70% of the total cost, if and when the time comes.
Which is estimated, like, what, $800 million?
Yeah, yeah.
In that ballpark. Mm-hmm.
And to be clear, that is also the cost of updating the banks at large, the five remaining lots. So... if you've ever been to the banks, listeners, like, there's literal holes in the ground. You can't walk through the whole thing. There's a parking garage underneath all of it. So the proposal essentially builds buildings on top of these five lots, these holes. Mm-hmm. And it's everything from, like, you know, housing, maybe one office building. There was a grocery store cited, which is kind of exciting. Hotels, things like that. Mm-hmm. But yes, there are other amenities in the plan, including the arena, marina, a cool, like, pedestrian pathway that, like...
like a serpentine.
Yeah, I love that word.
In front of
yes,
where the Freedom Center is.
Yes, and a cool, like, landmark to have, you know, photo ops and events.
So, as far as a timeline, obviously we talked about... there's a lot of money that needs to be raised. There's a lot of developers and investors that need to be courted.
Right.
But in terms of the process, this update to the bank's plan is going to go, like, through the gauntlet of approvals, starting, I guess, with the Planning Commission, eventually City Council.
County.
The county. Any feel for the timeline? Because I guess once that's done, from what I understand, then they will... seek proposals to bring in a new master developer. Is that right?
Yeah. you'll have to forgive me. I don't remember if they're going to do it individually by the lot, but I know based on this master plan, the goal is to make it look more cohesive than the banks already does. Mm-hmm. So if they had, you know, a handful of developers doing individual projects, that might look a little crazy. So we'll see what they come up with. But this is supposed to happen in terms of approvals by June-ish summer, which hopefully means by the end of 2026, these bids will be out. And we might have actual projects that are underway, pre-development, of course, not actually in the ground, mm-hmm. shovels in the ground.
All right. Well, we know you're going to be on top of it, along with a lot of our other reporters. I should now, before we let you go, Sydney, tell you who our special guest is going to be.
Please.
Excited about this. Chris Seelbach, who that name will sound very familiar to people who follow politics in this town, was on city council for 10 years. Took a break, and now Chris Seelbach 2.0 is the president and CEO of the SPCA. He's been in that role just a little longer than a year, and they had some big announcements in terms of bringing an adoption center to Over the Rhine and other upgrades in animal care that they're going to roll out. And they just finished a very successful fur ball.
I love the name of that, too.
The fur ball.
When he said it, I was like, that's such a good name.
That's like a dance? Like an event?
It's like a dinner.
Fundraiser?
Like a dinner fundraiser dinner.
The fur ball?
Like, they brought in more than like $600,000.
Wow.
Like, this was a big event. I got to go.
Oh.
Yes. Anyway, so we're going to bring in Chris Seelbach right now. So, Sydney, thank you.
You're welcome.
And, keep us up to date on what I think is going to be a very interesting process as we see.
Yes, people are very passionate about this. The banks has been kind of undone for decades. So we'll see if this is the actual plan that'll move the needle.
All right. Well, let's bring on Chris.
Let's do it.
Welcome to special guest time on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. With us, as promised, the president and CEO of the SPCA, our good friend, former city council member, Chris Seelbach.
Hi, it's good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
I can't believe this is your first official time on the podcast.
Yeah, I think I called in once, but this is my first time in studio as of an official guest, so it's great to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you. You are coming off of a massive week.
Yeah.
You had your annual fundraiser, the Big Ball, which I had the honor of attending.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for being there.
It was a lot of fun. You guys put on a great event. I mean, it's an occupational hazard. I go to a lot of these things. But this was fun. We'll talk about that more later. But the big news that you announced at the gala, at the bash, was that you guys have a pretty massive expansion planned. And you've been president how long now?
13 months.
13 months.
Not long.
So barely over a year.
Yeah.
And things are happening.
Yeah.
Let's start right there. Let's start with you are... you have plans to open a pet adoption center in Over the Rhine.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, SPCA is 153 years old, the fourth oldest animal welfare organization in the country, older than the Cincinnati Zoo. So we have this long, rich history of supporting and helping animals that are homeless find homes and a lot of other things for so long. And you know, up until 13 months ago, the same kind of people had been running it for about 40 years, and they had been doing a great job. I mean, SPCA has had made a big impact on our community for a long time. But I was brought in as an outsider. I had been in animal welfare since city council for 2 years. I led Ohio Alley Cat for 2 years, but came to SPCA Cincinnati not after a long history in animal welfare or even leading nonprofits.
All right. Well, let's pause for a moment.
Okay.
So you actually started your own.
Yeah.
I forget what it was called. You just said it.
What?
Alley Cat?
Alley Cats.
Yeah. Ohio Alley Cat.
You're passionate about animal welfare.
Yeah, I am.
But that was No pun intended, or maybe it is. That was a pet project, you know?
Yeah.
Did you think that would lead to the opportunity you have right now?
No. I mean, I will tell you that my mom will say that there's nothing that I'm more passionate about, not even LGBT rights, and I am passionate about that, than animals. I mean, as a kid, it is just what made me happy. I saved and, you know, found lost animals at every month and was, you know, reuniting them with people. And when I was 5 years old, I came home from preschool and found out that some food comes from animals. And I've been a vegetarian ever since then, since I was 5 years old. So it is just inside of me, my love for animals. And after I left council 4 years ago, I was really burnt out on politics, on divisive everything. And I took a break from work. I took a year off and really reassessed what I wanted to do with the rest of my life, or at least the next chapter. And in those conversations with the people who know me the most, every one of them kept coming back to what makes you most happy is animals, and the fact that animals really are one of the few things in this world that bring people together. And it was kind of an epiphany for me of like, could there be a way for me to be in animal welfare? And then this job came up with Ohio Alley Cat, which is an incredible organization that is an all cat spay neuter clinic and adoption center. And, you know, their executive director came open and I was like, I mean, this sounds like a perfect job, but why would they even give me an interview? Like, I've never run a nonprofit. I've never been involved in animal welfare besides kind of being...
Some would say running the city is like running a nonprofit.
That's true. And when I was on city council, absolutely, I made animal welfare a priority in a way that I don't know that anyone had. But I stumbled into this job at Ohio Alley Cat, and then it led me to SPCA Cincinnati, you know, really bringing an outsider, true, fresh perspective to this 153-year-old organization. And so I have, you know, seen that there is so much more potential to lead SPCA Cincinnati into the next era. So what does animal welfare, progressive, forward thinking, the standard that we can set for this region and this country, what does that look like? And I've spent the last 13 months kind of assessing and creating plans to lead the next phase of this legacy organization. And so on Saturday at our Fur Ball, which raised $639,000, which is incredible, we announced that we are opening an adoption center in the heart of Over the Rhine, bringing accessibility, our services from our main campus in Sharonville to the heart of the city where people are living and working and having fun, and that we're building a state-of-the-art brand new medical center at our campus in Sharonville, and then taking our current medical space and transforming it into a foster care center, because no animal does better in a shelter than they do in a home. So even if it's not a forever home, we want more animals to be in foster homes than we do in our shelter. And we're making an investment to take our foster program from this kind of side program to like a core part of what we do. So it's a $3.5 million investment in a new medical center, a foster expansion, and then an adoption center in the heart of Over the Rhine. And, you know, I just think it's setting SPCA Cincinnati up for our next chapter, and that we're no longer kind of maintaining the status quo, but really leading this exciting new era in a legacy organization that people love in Cincinnati.
So one of the things that, one of the many moments at the Fur Ball that were eye-opening to me was the program you're developing to incorporate play.
Yeah.
Being the owner of two dogs, I don't know how that happened.
Yeah.
I do know how that happened, but that's another story.
Yeah.
Play is everything.
Yeah.
You know, we raised, both of us, you know, raised these dogs before Lauren and I got together. Mm-hmm. We raised these dogs from puppies. The video you showed of the animals at playtime really spoke to me. Talk about the importance of that program. And you would think, I mean, as a dog owner, it sounds kind of obvious, but it's not standard operating procedure in most shelter operations.
When I first started SPCA 13 months ago, and I took my mom on a tour and we walked through our kennels, you know, I think her reaction was, are these dogs even adoptable? Because they really present in their worst light when they're in a kennel. They're stressed, they're pacing, they're barking, they seem aggressive. They are not happy. It is like a small prison cell. And, you know, I think we tried to get them out maybe for a walk every day, but it wasn't a lot of interaction. And there was not interaction between dogs in a play group or in a play yard. And when I started to reach out to leaders across this country on what are the best practices for shelters like Cincinnati, everyone kept saying this organization called Dogs Playing for Life, which is a national organization that is the model of how you do structured play groups in shelters like SPCA Cincinnati. And so I reached out to them to learn more and realized that, you know, there is so much value in just allowing dogs to be dogs, putting them into a play yard and letting them play with each other. They learn how to be a dog best by being corrected and by seeing other dogs be good dogs. They show better to potential adopters. They show their true self where they are not showing their true self behind a kennel door. They expend energy so much more and are happier when they're wrestling with their friends and, you know, basking in the sun, where they, you know, maybe get a little of that energy out on a dog walk, but not nearly what they can by having fun with their friends. But it is not as simple as just letting 12 dogs in a play yard and letting them play. You know, these are dogs that are being surrendered to us because of behavioral problems, or they develop behavioral problems because they're in a kennel in a high stress environment for months on end. So you really have to have the expertise to know how to build a play yard, to run it and correct, know when to correct a dog, when they can be unsafe towards other dogs or to the handlers, and know how to keep the flow of dogs coming and going. And so we really invested in this model of going to the dogs national in their facility in Florida, bringing them to 4 days on intensive training for all of our employees on site, then sending some of our identified leaders to different facilities that they have throughout the country for extended education. And so we're committed to this model. The goal is that every single dog in our care has at least one play group every day. It's every dog every day. And we have seen that the success is undeniable. Our dog length of stay, the average time a dog spends with us, has gone from 108 days to less than 50 days in a year. So the benefit of just structured playgroup is astronomical. And our employees are happier. They get to see these dogs have fun every day. And that's a lot better for them, for the dogs, everybody, than seeing them in the high stress environment that is kind of sitting in a prison cell behind a kennel gate. So it's just been life-changing for us adopting this kind of structured playgroup model.
Talk more about the timeline for the Over the Rhine Adoption Center. Where's it going to be? What's it going to be like? And who do you think, I'm curious too, as we see more people moving, back to the, what we call the urban core.
Yep.
Did you do like a needs analysis? I'm really asking is what sparked the idea of anywhere you could put an adoption center, over the Rhine?
You know, I will tell you that this sparked, when we brought Dogs Playing for Life to Cincinnati, I took the leader of the group that came here from Dogs Playing for Life out to dinner at Alcove on Vine Street with me and my board chair back in late summer. And we were talking about our dog length of stay and how 108 days is way too much, and problem solving of what we can do to change that. And we were saying, you know, we worry about accessibility. Our location's in Sharonville, and that's the deep suburb, and we're actually in a little, somewhat of a rural location in Sharonville. And, you know, Aaron, who is from Dogs Playing for Life, we were sitting in Alcove on Vine Street in the late summer, and he's like looking around at the neighborhood and how many people and just how alive Over the Rhine and that part of Over the Rhine was. And he was like, I'm looking around here and like, this is your solution. This is part of the solution. Like, this is where you need to be. And my board chair and I were like, well, yeah, that would be exciting. That would be really cool. Like, and so that was what sparked the idea of someone who we rely on and trust saying, I'm looking at the neighborhood and this restaurant and the people that are around here and how alive this neighborhood is and saying, this is what you need to bring. You need to bring your services and the adoptions right to the heart of the city. So pretty close after that, I reached out to my friends at 3CDC and said, I have an idea that I want to explore. And so we started looking at storefronts.
And a half hour later, you had a contract, I'm exactly. sure, because that's how they roll, right?
They're like, no. But we did start looking at spaces. We were looking at one on Vine Street. We ultimately settled on a location on Main Street, 1312 Main Street. It's right at the entrance to Ziegler Park. And it's a space that they meant to build out as a restaurant. So it's really a raw space that we're able to completely build out our needs. And it's, as I said, very close to Ziegler Park and only a few blocks from Washington Park. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be in the Main Street corridor, which, you know, is also just also alive and a big part of Over the Rhine. So what it's going to be is there's going to be 6 kennels, 2 dog meet and greet rooms, a cat room, a cat meet and greet room, and then a big lobby. So there will be dogs and cats in the window of Main Street, just like a pet store that you can imagine, you know, that song, How Much Is That Doggy in the Window? There are going to be dogs in the window, cats in the window. And we're also going to invest in staffing that will just be responsible for making the connections to the corporate communities. We want people that work at Kroger or Procter & Gamble, the Inquirer, on their lunch break to come and take a dog for a walk or take them to the Washington Park Dog Park or, you know, after work, go to a brewery and we're having an adoption event at one of the local breweries. So we want to be fully integrated into the Over the Rhine downtown, the Banks community, because this isn't a service. Animal welfare and an organization like SPCA has not lived and kind of been fully integrated into our urban core.
I didn't think about the dog walking part of it.
Yeah.
All the people who work downtown.
There's so many dogs downtown. It's actually crazy. Even big dogs. I'm really surprised. I'm like, where are they living downtown?
Right.
You know, like in the apartments. Yeah.
But Casey, you could be, you know, needing to get some fresh air one afternoon.
Exactly.
You could be mad at your editor and think, that's it. I'm going to go to the SPCA and walk a dog.
Right. No, that would be so fun.
What a cool thing.
Yeah. And the dog will have a shirt on that says, adopt me. I'm up for adoption.
Wow.
So hopefully it will lead to more adoptions of these dogs.
Yeah.
But we do a paw pass, which is kind of a very short-term foster where we let you take a dog out for an hour and walk it. And so it's going to be an exciting addition to the urban core.
Will you be doing admissions as well at that facility?
We won't be doing intakes. So all of our intakes, and we do a managed intake process. So you have to have an appointment. All of those will still have to come through our Sharonville location.
Gotcha. Okay.
But most of our animals are owner surrendered, but that process will still be at Sharonville.
Gotcha. Well, let's talk about that part of it, and also the philosophy of the SPCA. You talked about the length of stay, bringing that down. Mm-hmm. Your philosophy, from what I understand, is that the only time a dog or cat will be euthanized is really because there's behavioral issues, there's illness or whatever. It's not a matter of you're on the clock because we need the space. You work very hard to keep that rate low of those days where you have to make a tough decision.
Yeah, I mean, SPCA does have a history of being a kill shelter. I mean, there was a time not so long ago that we were euthanizing for space. That is no longer the case and hasn't been for over a decade. Our live release rate, which means the number of animals who come into us, how many of them are adopted or transferred out, has been about 99% or even close to 100% month after month after month. So we are never euthanizing for space. The only time we ever euthanize is if it's because an animal is suffering, so a medical condition. Very rarely is it a behavioral issue. Now, if a dog is vicious, and that is a legal definition, we cannot adopt out a vicious dog. If a dog does have a bite history and would be unsafe for us to adopt out, there are very rare cases where we'd have to euthanize. But it is, you know, less than 10 in my first year that has happened, and we adopt out thousands of animals. So it is very rare that we will ever euthanize an animal. And when we do, it's in the best interest of that animal because either medical or behavioral issues. But we are definitely a no-kill shelter with a very close to 100% live release rate, which is something we're really proud of.
And you said that's not the history of the SPCA.
No.
When did that start to change?
You know, I think there was a shift probably two decades ago, and that was made a reality about a decade or so ago. So it wasn't that long ago. But, you know, there's been a shift in sheltering around this country. An organization called Best Friends kind of introduced the no-kill movement, and you know, there's needed to be investment from both the private and public sector in allowing animals to have the resources to go through intake and find homes. And that costs a lot of money and resources. But we are very lucky at SPCA Cincinnati to be well-funded, well-run. We're 100% privately funded, so all of our money comes from the support of the community around us. And because people, I think, have stepped up their investment of animals, we're able to support a system where we don't have to euthanize for space. But it is relatively new in the last decade or so.
How big are you as an organization? Not the volunteers. We'll talk about them in a minute and how you can volunteer and what you guys need. But you have a big operation.
Yeah.
I mean, to say you're the chief executive officer, this is not like a five-person outfit. You've got a large organization.
Yep.
And, I mean, medical personnel. And talk a little bit about what really is, you know, what is your job? Let me ask it that way.
Yeah. That's a good Yeah, I mean, we have close to 50 full-time employees, a very engaged, impressive board, hundreds of volunteers, and, you know, it's a big operation. So, you know, my job is to ensure that we have big impacts for animals in our community. We just passed, our board did a six-month process of a strategic plan for the next 3 to 5 years, and we have a vision where we are going to continue having a big impact in this community for animals. So my job is to make sure that we have the money to do that. So it is bringing on new donors, making the relationships with our current donors, continuing those relationships and building upon them, ensuring that the money that we raise is well spent and that we are shepherding the dollars in a way that's responsible and efficient. And it's also, I have 8 direct reports that run the day-to-day operations of our shelter. So everything from operations to medical, we have 2 full-time veterinarians and a handful of registered vet techs and vet assistants to our humane education. So we gave away 150,000 pounds of free pet food last year. So that is a effort to keep pets in their homes. So we work to prevent animals from being surrendered from us as a last resort by ensuring that people who are having trouble affording pet food or pet supplies have those resources. We introduced a pilot program this year, a $10,000 pilot program. So when someone calls to surrender a dog or a cat And if there is a need that costs money, so a one-time pet deposit because of a rental situation, we will consider paying that in order to keep the pet in the home, or a spay-neuter procedure or a vaccine. We have real dollars to help keep animals in their home. You know, it's our development, raising money, our finances, our HR, all of that is what I oversee on a day-to-day basis to make this kind of legacy, large organization run well. You know, a liaison between our board of directors. All of these are my day-to-day. And then I'm also on air. We have a longstanding partnership with Local 12 that I've done in my first year, three live spots a week, Tuesday morning, Tuesday afternoon,
you
and Saturday morning.
You're becoming a TV star. Do you get recognized in the street? Hey!
I will tell you, it has been so much fun, you know, having been on city council for the for a decade, that when someone says that, when someone recognizes me and they say they recognize me from being on TV with a dog or a cat, that is so much more fun.
Very
than
cleansing.
Saying like, I recognize you from that streetcar discussion or something.
Right,
that, like, it has been so much fun when someone's like, you're that guy. And then they'll follow it up. Oh, I saw you on Saturday morning with that, that Doberman or that pit bull or whatever. That has been so much more fun than being recognized from my work on city council. So yeah. So those are kind of some of the things that I do on a day-to-day basis.
What is the hardest part about your job so far in 13 months?
You know, I think managing people can always be a challenge. You
truth.
Know, yes.
I'm like, why'd you look at me when you said that?
Yeah. And you know, I've made some big changes. You know, the things that we've been announcing, this new medical center, the new foster center, the new adoption center, those are big things that we announced on Saturday that have taken a lot of time, a lot of getting buy-in, a lot of the details behind the scenes. You know, I'm a staff that are incredible, but you know, have been doing good work. I think I've raised the bar, raised the standard, and try to, and I hopefully have inspired a new level of commitment and direction in the staff, and brought on new people, had to transition some people. I think those are always challenging, but it's also exciting because the people who are here, I mean, they want to have a big impact on animals. And they recognize that we are doing things different and aiming for better and higher and different results, because that is the goal. But there are always challenges in managing close to 50 people on a day-to-day basis. You know, I always, you know, my life's motto is the hard makes it great. It's a quote from A League of Their Own. I always find value in the hard work, because it's not an immediate gratification, but the long-term success of the hard work is so worth it. And so I dig deep into those hard conversations where the hard work needs to happen, because when you finally see the success of that hard work, it makes it so much better.
It's hard being a change maker.
Yeah, yeah.
It can be lonely.
Yeah.
Sometimes. And we talked about this already, but 13 months is not a long time.
No.
Like, you did not sit back and, you know, assess for a year. It seems like you very quickly decided it was time to, as you said, raise the bar. And you delicately said you had to transition some people. I'm sure there was turnover. People don't like to change.
No.
People don't like to change, even if they could have the best hearts, but it changes hard.
Mm-hmm. Change is hard. And that doesn't mean that the people who transition work great, but they, you know, when moments change, different skills are needed and opportunities may be better in different organizations. that is just the reality of change in leadership. And, you know, I am a change maker, and that is not always the type of person that organizations want. But I was very clear to the board who were considering me, and they came to me. This isn't an opportunity that I submitted my resume for. They came to me and said, would you be interested in this? And I was very clear on, I want you to make sure you know who I am. I think once I appeared in an Enquirer storyteller event that was about rabble rousers, and I come in and see things that could be done better or things that can change and dive right into those change. I see things that need to be talked about that may make people uncomfortable and want to put it on the table and talk about it. So I am, that is who I am. And I was clear to the board that that's the kind of leader I would be. And, you know, they, I've been incredibly appreciative of this board of directors that have welcomed that change. And are excited about this new era of SPCA Cincinnati.
So if I want to volunteer,
yeah,
like what are the list of needs you have and the biggest, I would say, opportunity for people to really contribute?
So two things come to mind. One is our foster. So we had about 2,500 animals went through our care last year, and about 1,000 of them were in our foster home at some point. And so we need volunteers who are willing to open up their homes to foster a cat or a dog. And that literally is whatever level of commitment you want it to be. If it's a weekend, if it's not even in your home, if it's you want to take a dog out for an afternoon, any amount of time that an animal can spend outside of a shelter and in a home is what is worth it. So we need people who, and we're expanding. I want more than 1,000 animals in foster homes this year. I'd love all 2,500 of our animals to spend time in foster homes. So we need people who are willing to open their homes for a day, a weekend, or weeks or months. And we can meet you where you are. We have an entire team that supports people willing to foster. And then the others are on-site volunteers. So people who are wanting to come and walk dogs or sit with cats or be part of our play groups. A lot of our volunteers actively participate every day in the structured play groups that we do, one in the morning and one in the afternoon, which is a lot of fun because you see dogs who appear shut down or reactive in our kennels and become happy-go-lucky, excited, amazing dogs when they're just able to play with their friends. So we need volunteers who are willing to come in and help facilitate our play groups. But then we have other opportunities where, you know, we're in 50 or so classrooms every year. So people who are going to Cincinnati Public Schools and talking about humane education and responsible pet ownership with kids, we have something for everyone. But the two main opportunities are being a foster and then on-site walking dogs or facilitating play groups.
All right. And speaking of fostering,
yeah,
before we started recording, and this is what I think is one of the most impressive things about you on a list of impressive yeah. things is you're not just the CEO. You're fostering a cat right now.
I'm fostering a cat named Pumpkin, who is 25 pounds. One interesting thing about Pumpkin.
Stop a minute. Yeah,
it's a perfect name.
We need that picture of Pumpkin to drop into the story that goes with this. Yeah.
Pumpkin is all over my social media as well. But so Pumpkin is an orange cat. And an interesting fact, over 80% of orange cats are boys. Pumpkin is a girl, and she is a regular size orange cat who is severely obese. I mean, she is just, and I took her in for a checkup a couple of Fridays ago, and we got the results of her x-rays and whatever they did with her. And the doctor told me yesterday, good news, there's no real problems, except she's just really fat. And so I am fostering, Craig and I are fostering this really fat orange cat that looks like a cat Pumpkin. And we may end up adopting her because she's really
Yes. Yeah, she's so cute.
Pumpkin's not going anywhere.
She is really cute. And she has a big personality. But she has to lose like 10 pounds, which is a lot for like a third of her body. So she's on a strict diet and, you know, she's a character. She can hardly move because she's so big. But
it's
she's
like Jabba the Hutt.
Yes, I mean, you know,
too much lasagna.
She's really a big girl. But we're committed to her health. So she's our foster daughter. Yeah.
Too cute.
Well, this has been inspiring, Chris. and we don't have video rolling, but you light up talking about this too.
Yeah,
I can tell,
really,
like,
do.
This is your jam. And it, you know, I have to say again, the ball was not just impressive from, it was actually a fun event like this, but the message you sent, the commitment that was obvious from your team and the volunteers, like I said, was impressive. So congratulations on a mm-hmm. great first year and
yep.
all of this. What's next?
You know, I think we have to now execute these plans that we've announced. So what's next is that we break ground in June on our medical center. We open up the OTR Adoption Center. We fully integrate into the urban core with partnerships with our corporate community, with the parks, with 3CDC, with the local businesses. We continue the Dogs Playing for Life structured play group. It's really, we've announced and have started some of these big changes. It's now successfully executing them and scaling them. And also thinking about what is the next thing that we're going to announce. You know, I have some big ideas that I'm not ready to announce here, but I think this time next year, there will be some even more exciting announcements. Look, I want SPCA Cincinnati to be the animal welfare leader in this region and setting the bar across this country. And we have the organization, we have the support from the community to do that. And I have the passion and excitement to lead us to do that. And it is a multi-year, maybe multi-decade plan. But this is the beginning of that. And so I think you will continue to see big ideas coming from the SPCA. But right now it's about executing the ideas that we've announced.
All right. Well, on that note, thank you for joining us today. Congrats on all this news and all this excitement. And we'll check back in with you. Most importantly, we're going to have a after picture of Pumpkin when she's...
So you're setting me up for failure, because if she doesn't lose weight, I'm going to feel awful.
No.
But I hope, I mean, we're doing everything we can. So I hope there's a successful after picture.
If not, you mentioned, you know, too much lasagna. If not, maybe right. She has a future in like playing live action Garfield or something
like
right?
that. I know, right? We're hoping for Pumpkin's success.
All right.
Yes, we are
too.
Yes.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks.
All right, Casey, are you ready to adopt a cat or a dog?
Definitely a dog. Not so much of a cat person. I'm allergic. That's my excuse.
Well, that's a good reason.
That's my excuse.
My reason's terrible. I just don't like cats.
They scare
obnoxious.
Me a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I don't hate them.
No.
I just am a dog person, I think.
I am too. Yeah. Yeah.
Although, I'm intrigued about Pumpkin.
I do love Pumpkin, though. And I was really proud of myself for the lasagna joke. I was
that was
proud.
Good. Yeah, that was good. That was very good. So at the Fur Ball,
yes,
get this. They had event photographers going around taking everybody's photos. Mm-hmm. And Lauren was wearing a highly bedazzled denim ensemble that she actually altered her own. She has a sewing machine now. That's her new, like, she's a habitual hobbyist, you know, like, so she's in her sewing era.
Yeah.
And so she, you know, fresh off like updating this outfit with her sewing machine, she was getting many compliments on her denim bedazzled outfit. And then at the end of the ball, they had a bow and a bell of the ball, and they flashed pictures, you know, flashed the picture of who they selected. And Lauren was the belle of the ball.
Was she totally surprised?
Totally surprised. Had to call her mom and her sister.
No way. That's awesome.
Yes.
I know. I need to see a picture of her outfit.
I will show you.
Yeah.
I should have given Chris a hard time, because she was like, what do I win? It was nothing. Just the notoriety.
Yeah.
So
you just get cheers from the crowd. That's it.
Cats and dogs.
Yeah. So it was a big That's So Cincinnati moment for me, because we went to the Fur Ball.
Yeah.
And again.
Had you been there before?
Never. Very fun. Very fun event. and people did turn up, and the theme was like backyard. He said it, yeah. Backyard denim song. And so lots of denim, lots of cowboy boots.
That's so funny.
Yeah, it was very fun. And then I got to go to the Hall of Fame induction gala.
Yeah, so jealous.
And I did get to say hi to Aaron Harang, our guest last week.
Mm-hmm.
And he is so nice, down to earth. Introduced me to his wife and daughters. You know, he was just like some dad, you know, mm-hmm. like in a stark contrast because, you know, Brandon Phillips, he kind of rolled into the reception like late to make an entrance, you know, yeah. had this like shiny,
the swag,
this suit was like shining and, you know, lots of bling, you mm-hmm. know, like a diamond encrusted watch and everything. And The contrast between the two personalities was amazing.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of pitchers are like that almost.
Like low-key.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Well, for sure. But yeah, Aaron's had a few funny moments in his speech. He told this story about how they were, I think, in Pittsburgh and they were getting booed at the end of the game. Because mm-hmm. they beat the Pirates, and the bus is leaving the stadium, and it stopped at a red light, and Sean Casey ran out of the bus and ran into this like Pittsburgh sports bar, and like threw some shade at the fans, and then ran back on the bus they're all chasing him out.
That's
and then,
so
yeah,
funny.
So stories like that. Lou Piniella, the manager of the Reds when mm-hmm. they won the World Series in 1990. Recounted, you know, great stories about Shotzi, Marge Schatz, who was the owner at the time, had her St. Bernard running all over the field.
Yeah.
And he talked about how one day it ran out in the right field and then took a dump and then proceeded to run back to the infield and in his words, hose down second base.
Oh my gosh.
So it's just nice seeing, you know, hearing from those guys.
Yeah.
Their speeches were long, though. I think, you know, they didn't stick to their 5 or 10 minute guidelines.
Who had the longest speech, do you think?
It had to be Brandon Phillips. It went on and on. He was reading off his phone. I mean, he started with like his kindergarten teacher and then thanked everybody in his life all the way up to that point. So, yeah, Aaron's wasn't that short either. You know, when we were asking him if he had a speech ready, he had multiple pages he was flipping through. But the cool thing about being that event for me is watching the interaction between some of the famous legacy players and the current players.
Yeah.
Like when Sal Stewart walked in, you know, he's on fire right now. Mm-hmm. He's a candidate for Rookie of the Year. Mm-hmm. He's got like this great, like scrappy, spirited playing style that the fans really love.
Yeah.
Some of the members of the Big Red Machine were like eager to meet him. You know what I mean?
Which can you imagine if you're Sal Stewart?
I don't think he realizes.
Probably not. I know.
In his early 20s, I don't think he realizes the magnitude yet. And I hope he doesn't because I don't want I don't want him to start slumping. But like, you know, Johnny Bench was talking to Tyler Stevenson, mm-hmm. you know, the greatest catcher of all time, probably talking to the current Reds catcher.
Yeah.
Just a fun event. You know, they do it every other year at the most. So it's, you know, and there were tons of people there.
Like, oh, I'm sure.
They filled up the ballroom of the convention center. So, yeah, I had a packed weekend, you know.
I bet,
with all of that, I'm ready to take a break.
Was that the same day or was it Saturday, Sunday?
It was Saturday and Sunday.
Okay.
Because the Reds had an evening game Sunday. And I feel sorry for the players. You know, they play a home series and then, you know, they have the day game on Sunday. And then they, instead of like chilling, they have to clean up, put on their cocktail party attire, you know. And deal with a bunch of fans like me.
Yeah.
But that's the great thing about the Reds organization.
The fun of it,
yeah, they do a really good job of events like this. The Hall of Fame obviously puts that event out.
Yeah.
And they do such a great job with opportunities like that for fans to to connect with players past and present. So hats off to them.
Yeah.
All right. Well, next week we need to rely on your social calendar because I'm going to like chill this week. I need to break.
Okay.
All right. Let's wrap it up, shall we?
Yep.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com. Our producer today, as always, or as usual, Phil Didion.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe, give us a rating, and share with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
Finally, if you value local journalism and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now is a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com, click on the subscribe button to see a special offer just for you.
Thanks again. See you next week.